Das ist Bern einfach. Jeden Tag die richtige Dosis Politik vom Nebelspalter. Kritisch und unabhängig.
Der Podcast wird gesponsert von Auditswiss, Ihrer Experte rund ums Thema Revision und Wirtschaftsprüfung. www.auditswiss.ch.
Das ist Bern einfach spezial aus London mit dem Daniel Hannan, Baron Hannan of Kingsclere. Er ist ein Mitglied vom House of Lords, früher einmal europäischer Abgeordneter gewesen. Jetzt ist er Direktor vom Institute for Economic Affairs. Daniel Hannan, nice to meet you. Nice to talk to you about Brexit. Because 10 years on from the referendum, Europhiles in the UK and in Switzerland, they believe Brexit has not delivered the principles, benefits that its supporters, and you were a supporter, said would be true. What went wrong?
Well, bottom line, Britain has grown faster than comparable large Western European countries. Our GDP since the vote has grown faster than that of France or Germany or Spain. So whatever it is that has afflicted us is obviously not Brexit. Now, lots of things have happened. The most obvious one is the pandemic. We had a stricter lockdown and a more generous furlough scheme in other countries. And therefore, we've had more of an issue of a long lockdown since people have not come back to work. We've had the same issues that everyone else has, the Ukraine war and the oil price and so on. But the big change here was that in 2024, we elected a government that began significantly to increase taxes and spending.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when you see the disappointing economic results. We always have very low unemployment, and that's beginning to change. We have serious budget deficits since lockdown, which is getting worse. I think the idea that all of this is a delayed effect of Brexit, that everything was fine, and then it suddenly went wrong just when we had a government that was mushing up spending and regulation, is kind of insulting our intelligence. The truth is, Brexit on its own doesn't add or subtract a penny from our finances. It just removes constraints and it allows us to make different choices. We've not made great choices recently. We've got very expensive energy. We've got very high spending. It's gone from like a third of GDP under Blair to close to half now. We've got, for the first time in the 70s, very intrusive employment laws. And this is what's causing our problem.
So you took back sovereignty, but you did not use it for good policies.
I'm afraid that's true. First, the pandemic, and then we've gone rather against the trend of Europe in electing a statist government. But I'd make an important point, Dominic, which is that our situations are not exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
During the campaign, I argued very strongly that we should have had a Swiss-type relationship with the EU.
Mm-hmm.
And Remainers are always quoting this back at me as though they've sort of got this. But there was never a moment before, during, or after that I stopped arguing that. Now it's probably impractical. The moment has probably passed. But I'm clearly of the view that it would have been better had we remained in elements of the single market in the EU, not the whole of it, but the bits where there were obvious economies of scale. While being outside the common agricultural policy, the common
policy,
and above all the customs union, right, which was always kind of disastrous for us. We're a country that trades a lot outside Europe. Another way of putting it is this. We didn't go for the Swiss option. We went for a harder break.
Mm-hmm.
And we paid a commensurately high price in terms of more trade friction in return for the freedom to do things very differently.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't used that. And so it's a bit like, I said during the campaign, Brexit is kind of like moving to a nicer house. However much bigger and better and more comfortable the new house is, the move is always going to be stressful. No one has worked out a way of moving house without stress. Having suffered that stress, we should now, we've assimilated the one-off costs of having to do all our own new customs procedures and so on, we should now be benefiting from reorienting to the markets that are growing, which is pretty much the whole of the world, except Europe. Not to diverge, to pay that high price and then not use it, to leave and then sit on the doorstep, that, it seems to me, is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where the critics should be directing their criticism.
The elephant in the room is immigration. And Europhiles in Switzerland say, look to Great Britain. They failed even to control immigration because, yeah, they did not use it.
Well, they controlled it. They just didn't. They chose to exercise their control.
Yes, in a way
that people were not expecting. Again, I'm not justifying it. It was obviously a huge mistake and it brought more problems than it solved. But it is important to remember the context of that immigration surge from 2021. Britain, unlike the rest of Europe, people were not coming back to work after the end of lockdown. If any of your viewers or listeners was in Britain at the time, they'll have seen every shop window with staff wanted signs. The pubs and restaurants were all closed because there were no chefs. The lorry drivers weren't coming back. There were problems getting goods around. And so in the panic of the summer of 2021, when the restrictions were lifted, a lot of work visas were issued. That was a mistake, but it was clearly the decision of the sovereign government. Right? Mm-hmm. A different decision could have been made, and a different decision is now being made. The numbers have fallen very substantially.
The Europhiles in both countries now want to rejoin the European Union or sign some kind of treaties, including institutional measurements and red tape that comes with it. And they say it's a solution for economic growth and the cost of living crisis. Is this true or false? What do you think about that?
You don't have a problem with economic growth compared to Europe, right? I mean, maybe you can measure Singapore or something, but compared to your neighboring countries, there's a reason why everyone is trying to come to Switzerland, right? I mean, to what problem is EU membership a solution? If you are in the Helvetic Confederation, to what problem is EU membership a solution? This is the most extraordinary thing that I have a lot of Swiss Europhile friends, including the leader of your European movement, who's a very, very nice woman, or the ex-leader. But I don't think they are really focused on the cost-benefit analysis. Mm-hmm. I think this is for them much more of an emotional longing to be part of something bigger. Because if you look at the economics on any metric, unemployment, inflation, growth figures, low taxes, or overall GDP, Switzerland is vastly better off than the EU, vastly better off. And so you'd need a really good reason to change what is obviously a deal that has worked for you very well. As I say, I wish we had gotten for that deal. Mm-hmm. I think we made a mistake initially in the talks not doing it, or Theresa May made a mistake. But obviously this is your call. I don't think either of our countries is actually going to join. The more problematic thing, the more dangerous thing, is that we will sign up to things, if you like, to make a point, which falls short of full membership, but is still very damaging.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then we would be kind of a passive membership without having any say. So we pass on the sovereignty and we are not part of it. So this is even a worse deal than being a member.
Just come back to the fundamentals, which for me, none of this has become any less true since 2016. Every continent in the world is growing significantly except Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Neither your country nor mine sits on great natural resources. I mean, we don't have diamond mines. You know, we don't have rare earths, right? You have beautiful scenery, but that's not a great resource.
Britain as well.
Your real resource has been a highly educated and enterprising population with the right institutions that have allowed that entrepreneurship to be rewarded. If we want to succeed in the world without sitting on piles of diamonds, we have to make our way by buying and selling. And both of our countries have understood that, particularly in services.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you have to be where the customers are.
Mm-hmm.
And the customers largely are not in the EU. Or at least think of where we're going to be 10, 20, 30 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where is the growth area? It's not going to be in Germany.
No. Right? And it brings me to what I usually say. Our countries have to be globally open and not focused on the European market. It brings me to a quote of Ralph Harris, a predecessor of yours.
Organization I recall.
Yes, the Institute of Economic Affairs. And he said, famously said in Switzerland, I think it was in 98, 99, and I quote him, "If the single market remains open to the world, Switzerland has no need to join it. If it ceases to be open to the world, Switzerland should not join it."
Well, I think Switzerland has a great deal because the single market is not a single thing that you sign up to, right? It is a series of harmonized laws in different areas. Switzerland, I think, has taken a very hard-headed, very practical approach. It has signed up to some elements of the single market.
Without the political...
And it's done so where it has clear advantages, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. a lot of its exports go to, mm-hmm. to the EU in some sectors. But it has not joined the customs union. Mm-hmm. In other words, it has not allowed the EU to regulate its trade with countries in mm-hmm. the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And that has been an extremely successful formula. And, of course, Ralph, he was right about most things, and he's right about that. If something is working, and it's working because people have thought practically, pragmatically about how to get the best deal, why change it?
Mm. Now, geopolitics has changed a lot in the world, and I hear it here in Britain and at home that this geopolitical change, especially in America, is playing into the hands of the Europhiles. They say, "Oh, we shouldn't have difficulties with Brussels because America is difficult. We have to rely on our neighbors being good neighbors to each other." They say. And what do you answer to those?
Agree. Of course, we want to have good neighbors. I mean, I think that's important. I think we, in terms of our attitude towards defending the freedom and integrity and independence of Europe, our attitude was not affected at all by Brexit. We were the first big supporter of Ukraine. We were training Ukrainian soldiers from 2014. When the U.S. was hesitating initially under Biden, we were sending supplies and weapons. We maintain troops in Estonia. We have an air base in Romania, which is effectively like the Romanian Air Force, protecting the Romanian airspace against Russian incursions. None of that requires us to be told what to do by the European Commission.
Mm. Why can't we just have a common market where we accept each other's rules and not being imposed rules from Brussels?
Wouldn't that just be great?
It has been for 500 years. This has been the concept
of... what we can call it? The European Free Trade Association.
Yes, yeah. But you left that.
I know, that was the worst mistake. We founded it in 1960.
Yes, indeed, together with Switzerland and others.
Exactly, and it is plainly working, right? It is, mm-hmm. the countries that have stayed in it are hugely outperforming the EU. But I'll tell you what I think might be a way that this all resolves itself for us, and I think this would have implications for you. The EU has put a number of, if you like, one-way barriers in the path of trade with the UK. So, for example, UK financial services companies are not granted equivalents in the EU. Chinese companies are, Mexican companies are, but not.
It's crazy.
But of course, why would we retaliate? That would be crazy. So we're very happy to have EU firms operating here. We want the cheapest money. We want, the goods checks that happen at the borders are overwhelmingly one way. There was a study that showed that the EU was conducting more checks on the border within Ireland than on the whole of the eastern frontier of the EU. We didn't have any checks at all until last year, and even now they are very technical and desultory. They don't really, EU nationals can use our e-gates at airports, not the other. I mean, I could bore you endlessly about this. The point is, first of all, we should be open, so we should not retaliate. If the EU puts rocks in its harbors, we should not retaliate by putting rocks in our harbors. We should be open. But second, it is obvious to me that this is not for the European Commission. It is not about finances. It's not about growth. It's still about deterring Euroscepticism by showing that there is a price to be paid. Or, in some cases, sheer sort of punitive anger about the Brexit vote. And so I don't really see that attitude changing in the short term. What might change it, because the gains and losses to the EU are proportionately so large, very little noticed. In 2025 in Brisbane, I think, they began a process of discussing the removal of trade friction between the Trans-Pacific Partnership, mm-hmm. CPTP, mm-hmm. and the European Union. Trans-Pacific Partnership is now slightly larger than the EU in terms of GDP per head, of course, much, much faster growing. And not just faster growing in the sense that its GDP is increasing within its current membership, but also there is a long queue of countries wanting to join, including Indonesia and Ecuador and South Korea.
Huge countries.
Yes. Now, it is obviously in the interest of the EU to do a deal with this vast market. And in doing so, it would do a deal with Britain because we're a member of the CPTPP. And so that may be the way in which, you know, overcoming the sort of anger and punitive urges in which the EU ends up doing what is plainly in its own interest and having an easier trade relationship with what is still, by a long measure, its single biggest trading partner, which is Britain.
Do you think the EU is able to do that, or from their idea? Where are they staying in
it's
5 years?
They take a long time to do trade deals. It is a challenge. Yeah. The EU is a very slow negotiator. But, you know, I think for the reason you were giving earlier, Trump has slightly changed the dynamics. I think there may be a little bit more urgency about forming links with other countries. Mm-hmm.
So Switzerland should look into this partnership as well.
Oh, CPTPP, definitely. Now, I think you may struggle, being a landlocked country, to be a member of a Pacific.
Union.
So we may have to slightly adjust the terms.
Yeah, but thank you, Daniel, for this conversation. Very interesting. Thank you for your time and all the best for the Institute for Economic Affairs and your work in the House of Lords.
Thank you, Dominic, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Das war Bern einfach.
Der Podcast wird gesponsert von Auditswiss, Ihrer Expert rund ums Thema Revision und Wirtschaftsprüfung. www.auditswiss.ch